UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome to Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network, where your hosts go through movies, remakes, and sequels. I'm your host, Brandon Shea Mutella, and joining me, as always, is one of 7.9 billion, Zach Moores.
Cookies need love like everything else, Brandon.
Cookies need love. Like, well, you know, Cookie Monster definitely needs love. Welcome to our discussion on Matrix Revolutions, and we have got returning Marcelo J. Pico. Marcelo, I'm happy to have you here to discuss this movie.
I'm happy to be back. I'm glad you didn't recast me. I'm here.
Yes, you are here. Yes. I think we'll be talking about that next time, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe. Oh, boy. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe. So, anywho, yes, so we are going to be talking about Matrix Revolutions. And I want to say right off the bat here, so we watched it the other night. Annika loved it. Like, she loved, my 8-year-old daughter, Annika, loves these Great. Movies. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but after we watched the first Matrix movie, Annika came downstairs to talk to my wife because it was her night off. And she came downstairs and she's like, I'm Neo. And they started making these punching motions, right? So, like, for like 2 days, she's like randomly out of nowhere, I'm Neo. And start doing this punching motion. She really, really loved these movies. So
taste. She has taste.
Yes. So it's been a lot of fun watching them with them. And I think we're going to take them to the theater to see the fourth one here. I think that'd be fun.
That's amazing. Yeah. How old is she?
She's eight.
She's eight. Wow, that's even younger than like, I don't think an 8-year-old Marcelo would have gone to see Matrix as a kid. That's something.
We fast forwarded the rave scene, and my wife is like, I think you should fast forward this part. I'm like, what? Because I didn't remember, right? And she's like, so I did.
That was an essential sequence, Brandon. They didn't must have really confused for the rest of the movie after not seeing that scene.
And then
later they're like, why are they fighting? Like, what? There's no reason for them to fight. You know? Yes.
And then on this one here, again, it's been a while since I've seen this one here. I'm like, I just got my new big TV here, and I'm like, I just hope that she's not looking at what's going on in this club scene with the Mayor of Evangelion, because there was some hardcore nipple twisting.
Whose club was that, Brandon?
I don't know. Marcelo Evangelion? Something like that. The Marcelo Evangelion.
Merovingian.
Merovingian. There we go.
Did I get that right? I'm horrible at pronunciation. Wow, that's stunning that I got that.
Point goes to Marcelo, not Brandon, for that character.
I'm glad we had him back, and I'm so glad that they brought back those two ghost guys from the last movie. Awesome.
I think it was really good because they established, obviously, that they didn't die because they phased out of the explosion in Matrix Reloaded. So I'm like, oh, cool, we're going to see him back in the... No, they're not in the film. No. But Brandon, what did you fast forward to the scene where Neo gets his eyes burned out with a electrical cord?
No, I didn't. Nor did I fast forward the scene where the guy that was on the Ripley thing... Right, the thing from Aliens had like the big gash on his face. I just left it. I'm like, it's just makeup.
The guy that was on the violence. Ripley thing. Very good. Yeah. Brandon's proficiency with character names continues. So
yeah.
although it's apt though. It's definitely a James Cameron thing. The power loader. So
yeah.
And I'm not going to jump to it yet, but I'll just say it's funny that. You know, James Cameron took it back in Avatar. Like, no, Matrix trilogy. That's
exactly
my
what
power
I was
loader.
Thinking too. Yeah, and then he took back the machines taking over the world with Dark Fate Terminator. So he's taking back all the things Matrix took from him. So we'll talk about it as it goes on. But Marcel, you were not on our Matrix Reloaded discussion. So before we jump into the Matrix Revolutions, do you have some thoughts on the Matrix 2 you'd like to share with us?
Oh, yeah. First, I'll say I'm sorry I couldn't make it. Long story short, I had to see The Eternals with a friend. We made plans, and those plans changed. And I'll tell you this about Eternals. I liked it, but I also was thinking a lot about Matrix Reloaded while watching that movie. I won't say why. I won't spoil that movie. But to me, a lot of similarities. And also, I thought, you know, I could have been talking about Reloaded now, but oh well.
Is there a rave scene in Eternals?
No, there's not a rave scene, but I'll just say this. There's something aching. There's something similar to the architect moment in Reloaded in Eternals. That's all I'll say. That's, you know, that's a light spoiler. Okay. It goes to show how much I think about the Matrix movies. I'll say about the Matrix trilogy overall, I said this in the last episode I was on the Matrix. I love all these movies, right? I was hyped to see Reloaded. I watched the Animatrix. I played the video game all the way through just to see those, you know, cut scenes directed by the Wachowskis. As far as I know, or at least written by them, you know, and starring these characters that we see in Reloaded and Revolutions, giving them, like, you know, a grander, you know, subplot. That was interesting to play through. And then I remember distinctly playing through that game and, like, getting a new teaser for Revolutions at the end. That was cool. Again, like, I think I said this in the last episode, too. Like, I don't think any other franchise has really tapped into that, like, like advertising campaign that the Matrix had. Like, they had the video game, the Animatrix, they had these amazing trailers.
Some have tried, I think, but never to the degree the Matrix did, and never to the success level that the Matrix did.
Absolutely not. So that year in 2003, I was all in. And I have 5 points to make. I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I missed out. I missed the boat last episode. I wasn't here. So I'll just say these 5 points. Okay, about Matrix Reloaded. Okay, Freeway Chase. Still amazing, stunning, love it. I was watching some behind-the-scenes documentary about the making of that freeway chase scene. It's insane to me how they pulled it off. They had to build an entire freeway to do that. I think it still holds up. That's one. The rave scene, which we mentioned earlier in Zion, I think it gets made fun of wrongly, but I think it's... you're laughing, but I assume you're one of those people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like it because it's doing everything that Wachowskis want to do in these movies. It just very basically says, hey, this is what we're fighting for. This is what it's all about. It's just love, sex. And yeah, I'm in. I love that rave scene. Okay, I'm all for it. Third point, Neo saves Trinity. And again, another moment of like absolute love between these characters that I think works well here. And it's a nice reference to the first movie. You know, they're switching roles, saving each other. That's a point. Fourth point, the architect. Okay, another scene in this movie that gets made fun of, but I love it because it just sits you down and says, hey, everything you thought about this world is completely wrong. It's like, this is what's happening for real, and now this is what's happening. And it just upends the entire franchise. And the audience, like Neo, everybody's just like, what the hell's going to go? What's going to happen next? I love that. Like, it could have been a very by-the-numbers sequel, but I think at that point, it really took a turn for the better. And then final point I have to make, the cliffhanger. I love it. And I think it's one of the better cliffhangers of any, like, movie, because it's, I don't know, speaking personally, it left me on edge. And now when I see like other film franchises try to do like a cliffhanger, I always judge those cliffhangers by Reloaded because like rarely has a cliffhanger been as exciting for me as Reloaded. Maybe Infinity War, Catching Fire certainly had that vibe, sort of like the Matrix Reloaded. But yeah, it's hard to top Matrix Reloaded in terms of cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. And also it felt great just, you know, waiting just 6 months to see the sequel. So yeah. Overall, loved Reloaded, and having rewatched Revolutions, I guess I'll tell you later if I, you know, if I end up liking it more or not. But yeah, that's it. Yeah, those are my Reloaded points.
I agree with 3 of your 5 points. I disagree about the Wraith and Zion because the question I was going to ask you here is, do you like that we saw Zion and went there? So I guess at all, and I guess your answer is yes.
I do.
Okay.
For me, it's one of those things where in the lead up to it, and I, again, like, I guess nowadays the only franchise I'd compare it to in terms of, like, audiences theorizing, fans like coming up with theories about what's going to happen next. Like, sort of like it was like, you know, back then, I can compare it to like the MCU now. Like what's going to happen? Like, what's, you know, is Doctor Strange going to, you know, split the multiverse? Back then, we thought, hey, what does Zion look like? Like, and I did not expect Zion to look like that, and I thought it felt very real, because in another sci-fi franchise, they would have made it more sci-fi. Like, but it's just, it's very grungy, it's very dirty, it's not what you expect. And for me, the casting in this, the people of color, just it's like 99% people of color in that Zion scene, and I loved it because it just felt different. Because I not to make a big deal of it, but like, you know, Star Wars movies, you know, pre Disney buying the franchise and everything, and also like sci-fi movies in general, back in the day, very white, these sci-fi franchises, they never really cast these people of color in these important roles. And even to see like hundreds and hundreds of people just dancing, celebrating, being very, it's beautifully representative of like Earth. You know, that's basically my boilerplate answer to give you why. Okay.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
But it's much more representative of the overall population of the planet than perhaps other Hollywood movies would have been. And then for the cliffhanger, I don't know.
I'll say this. I was confused the first time I saw this, and I was like, huh. It's like, why is that guy on the table? But then,
where's
like,
the previously the end, like, on the Matrix recap? That's what we needed at the beginning of this. So.
Yeah,
well, I remember distinctly just also confused on one hand, but then also thrilled and like excited. And then sitting through the credits and watching the Revolutions teaser at the end of Reloaded and being even more excited. Hard to replicate. Mm-hmm.
Well, because you mentioned it, I'll mention it too there. I'm glad you reminded me. So I watched the Animatrix for the very first time for this year, and I got to say I really enjoyed it.
Good.
I thought most of them were very, very good. I think the only one that I didn't really like was the running guy. I don't know. That one just didn't work for me. But I think all the rest of them I loved. Like the kid's story I thought was fantastic. That was my favorite of them all. But like that samurai one, you know, like again, I've only seen him once and I just watched him kind of briefly, but for the most part, I thought it was really, really good. So I'm glad I finally got a chance to watch that. It's been on my list for a long, long time. And it didn't come in, like I bought my wife the 10-disc DVD box set when we were dating.
Right.
And I bought the HDV box set, but it was only the three movies. It didn't have the Animatrix on the HDV set.
You know, we talked about like the home video releases of these movies in the episode I was on with like color timing and everything. I went through just to make a point about the Animatrix. I'm glad you enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have time to rewatch them. I wanted to, and I was thinking about them earlier. I was like, you know, yeah, like the stories I love from that Animatrix are the kid one, because I think that gives like a lot more context to the kid in the movies, obviously.
Yeah.
Like it gives you more of like, you know, his motivation and like the origin of the machines taking over.
Yeah, that
like
was my two. That was my favorite. Oh, yeah. The origin of the machines. Yeah,
that was intense. Yeah.
I was like, I'm on the machine side.
Yeah. Those three, because like I think the machines one is like two parts, and then the kid one is one. Those three parts really stuck out in my head, and I completely forgot about the Renner one. Now I remember, and the Samurai one. Yeah, I need to rewatch the Animatrix. But the box sets, it's frustrating because I wanted to rewatch the Burly Man Chronicles, which is a documentary about the making of the sequels, and apparently that's not on the 4K box set. Like, I had to dig out the Blu-ray box set. It's very confusing.
Is that under HDVD, Brandon?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you better believe it is.
Yeah. I totally recommend those behind-the-scenes documentaries, especially the Burly Man Chronicles, because Warner Brothers, they do good work with their documentaries like that and, like, the Lord of the Rings appendices. But they don't do a good job of, like, with every new generation of you know, of discs or whatever. Like, they, like, there's stuff that's left behind. So, yeah. And I also, somebody tweeted at me, apparently those, that documentary is on YouTube, The Brillo Man Chronicles. Mm-hmm. I recommend that.
Yeah. Awesome. Excellent. Well, Zach, should we jump into some history of the Matrix revolutions?
Let's do it. So the Matrix Revolutions came out just a few months after The Matrix Reloaded, which is a very unique thing as far as blockbusters go. Movies in general, as far as sequels go.
Marcella could probably answer the one that we mentioned because we were thinking about this. Kill Bill, how much time was between the two Kill Bills? Do you remember?
Kill Bill was a year.
Was it a year? I didn't think it was that long. I thought it was only about 6 months.
I remember it. I know one was released in 2003, the other one was 2004. Mm-hmm. I think 2003 summer.
Yeah, it was like summer. It was like a summer, then like a early winter, early spring.
Yeah, I remember them being split up over the course of a year because in the first teaser before they split them up, it's, you know, the teaser says Uma Thurman will kill Bill in 2003, and it did not end up being the case. No. She killed him in 2004.
That's good. Spoilers.
Yeah,
Kill Bill.
Oh, but yeah, he gets killed.
Shocking. Title of the movie happens in the movie. So, but yeah, so Matrix Reloaded came out on May 15th, 2003, and Matrix Revolutions came out on November 5th, 2003. Remember, the 5th of November. There we go. Wachowskis, Vendetta, hashtag, it's all connected. So,
it's all connected.
We'll get into some of the box office numbers at the end here, but the beginning of the movie, right? The Matrix rousing theme that starts. Every Matrix movie starts this way, the strings and the horns, and so that ascends a key in each movie, a key on the musical scale. So The Matrix, the first film, it starts in the key of E minor, and then in The Matrix Reloaded, it goes up to the key of F sharp minor, and then in The Matrix Revolutions, in this film, it goes up again to the key of G minor. So all of our musician friends out there might have noticed that. Probably appreciate it. I like how there's a progression. I thought that's pretty cool.
I did not notice that.
Me neither. I'm tone deaf. you guys might know this. Don't the Star Wars movies openings kind of do something similar where like a different instrument is like focused on like with each movie that John Williams scores? I read that somewhere.
That might be true with the original trilogy. I'm pretty sure they just copied and pasted the openings for the prequels and then... Yeah. Perhaps for the sequels as well. So, but I do know they're slightly different orchestrations, at least of the original trilogy. You can tell on the soundtrack if you listen to it. So,
okay, that's probably what it was. And then they just gave up.
Then they're like, "Yeah, just copy and paste it." So, a lot of discussion. We mentioned this last time about the Oracle, who is recast in this film. Gloria Foster unfortunately passed away in between the Matrix 2 and 3's productions. So. To recast her, the actress Mary Alice was chosen, and she had actually played the sister of Gloria Foster in a long-running Broadway play. So that was a really interesting way to get someone who kind of knew her and knew her mannerisms and that kind of thing. And that was a big thing for the casting director. Malie Flynn noted that when she was looking for a replacement actress for Gloria Foster. And there was talk of if they were even going to mention the fact she was recast or have them, like when Morpheus and Trinity meet here. But they adapted the original scene where they were going to meet her there to reference her change in appearance. They were thinking about having them not notice at all, which would have been even more awkward. And I agree. Like, you have to address it, I think. And being in a computer world of avatars and programs, you know, I think it worked.
I'm going to say that they, you know, it's fine that they did. But I'm going to say that they didn't need to based on that Louis Buñuel film. They didn't need to acknowledge it at all. Do you know what I'm talking about, Marcelo?
I do not.
So in Louis Buñuel's film, That Obscure Object of Desire, he had two actresses in mind for the role. He loved both of them. They were very different looking. He cast both of them to play the role in the movie and just filmed different scenes with different actresses and didn't acknowledge it in any way, shape, or form in the movie. And there were people who left the theater and had no idea that he did this. They just didn't notice that there was two different women playing this role in the whole movie.
What year did this movie come out?
Oh, this was 1977.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's they don't even look the same. Like it's crazy watching some of the behind the scenes interviewing the actresses and stuff. So, anyways, I think that the black woman that we see in the the new one, the Resurrections trailer that has the square glasses and is reading Alice in Wonderland, that's going to be the Oracle.
No, I think that's the girl from this movie.
Oh,
that possibly. Seems yeah. That seems to be what the internet thinks as well. But okay. We'll see.
Yeah. But yeah, I like. I mean, it's something that, of course, they had to scramble and like. And I think Mary Alice is great. I think she's a great replacement. I mean, you can't top the original Oracle, but still. And also, apparently, Mary Alice worked with Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, she played his mom in his first professional stage appearance. Hashtag is all connected again.
Yeah. And also, this might give fuel to the fire for, like, what shape Morpheus might take in Resurrections. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see.
Well, the Oracle's a program. Morpheus is a person.
I don't know.
So, we'll see.
Hey, shape-shifting, it's all connected. We'll
see. Yeah, I think, based off the situation they found themselves in, they did a good job.
Yes.
Although there is something like the connective tissue is lost between the first two. Like when we have the scene, the bookending, the first, because Neo goes to see her and talks to her in the same kind of room. I was like, okay, well, that would have, probably felt more bookended if it was the same actress and stuff. But I think it's really cool. She had these connections with the other actors and actresses from The Matrix and they plugged her in. And unfortunately, Gloria Foster did a great job in the first two films. The third film was really the one that the Oracle has the most to do, and that's the one she didn't get to be in. So, but Mary Alice did a good job as the Oracle 2.0. Speaking of, when Neo goes to see the Oracle again in her apartment, the jazz song "I'm Beginning to See the Light" plays in the background, and that same song played in the background when he met the Oracle in the first film. So it's like poetry; it rhymes.
Oh, thank you, George Lucas.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So Ian Bliss, who plays Bane, he was cast based off his Hugo Weaving impression and his partial resemblance to Hugo Weaving. And I think, he really does a really good Hugo Weaving impression. I think it's more effective earlier, and then near the end, it's like literally just a guy doing a Hugo Weaving impression where it's like, I could talk like this, don't you see me? I think it's like, Neo, come on. But hey, you know what? Neo was slow. All right, he's slow on the pickup, so I believe it would take him that long to figure it out.
Yeah, he's a lovable dummy. Yeah, I've seen people make fun of that moment when Neo takes that long to realize who he's talking to. It's very obvious.
Who else would call you Mr. Anderson, right?
Yeah.
But I gotta say, Ian Bliss, man, I hope he had a good career of doing like Hugo Weaving impersonations because he really did a really good job.
Nice bar trick.
Now, speaking of the character of Bane, the crew of the Hammer, the ship that they all end up on at the end, which, by the way, is actually called Mjolnir, Thor's Hammer. I can't pronounce it, but that's why they call it the Hammer. I got the meow meow, to quote Kat Dennings from the Thor movies. I'll just go with that. That's the official name, but of course no one can pronounce it, so they just call it the Hammer. But anyway, the crew of that ship, they talk about VDTs as a possible cause for why Bane is acting so strange and what happened to him. But there is no actual definition of what that is in the movies. Some sources claim that it stands for virtual delirium tremens, which is a form of delirium tremens caused by the absence and or withdrawal of certain substances. So basically they were saying maybe he's going through some kind of withdrawal of some kind. Mm-hmm. But that's just some kind of in-universe world-building thing. Sure. Cool, but that's what VDT is perhaps referencing.
Mm-hmm. I see the Wachowskis wanted to add some, midichlorian level sort of wordage.
So, universe building.
Yeah, exactly.
No Jedi has a midichlorian count that high. But so, Brandon, your favorite character, the Merovingian, in the one scene that he's in this film, his tie is actually a Merovingian tie knot.
Oh.
Who knew?
I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't either. I just thought Windsor knot is the only one I know.
See, Marcel, this is the kind of deep cut trivia here that we hired him for. Isn't this guy good?
So next time I wear a tie, I'm going to try and tie it like a Merovingian knot, I guess.
I'm pretty sure I saw him. I'm actually looking up right now. I saw the new... Oh, yes, he is. He's in the new Paul Verhoeven movie. The actor who plays the Merovingian, Benedetta, is the movie. And I saw that this past week, and he plays a substantial role in it. And I'm like, that guy looks familiar. Of course, it's 20 years later, mm-hmm. so he's aged. I go, oh, it's him. But I think it's very funny.
I assume he's not doing a ridiculously over-the-top French accent in this film.
No, he's speaking French.
Well, there he goes. But that's the thing, right? He's fluent in both English and French. But he's like, hey, the Wachowskis wanted me to do it this way, okay? So this is I'm following the directions of my directors. So
Lambert Wilson, good in this year's Benedetta. I can't pronounce that. But the new Paul Verhoeven. So, yeah.
The Merovingian in Benedetta. Got it. So now, hey, Brandon, we remember Bruce Spence from the Mad Max movies.
Yes.
Take it easy, partner. Right. So he plays the train man, right? And his his domain is that the train station, right? And so it's labeled as Mobile Avenue, like the Mobile Avenue train stop. Mm-hmm. Mobile, mixed around the words, anagram limbo. That's where Neo is. Much like, you know, Neo is an anagram of one. I don't know if anyone knew that or not. How is there any question that Neo is the one when his name is Neo? But anyway.
You know, I'm glad you reminded me because I knew that the Mobile Ave was like a anagram for something. And I always forget. I'm like, what does that spell? Alive something? No, it's limbo.
The avenue throws you off. You just leave the avenue off. But Mobile, he's in limbo because it's really where he is, right?
Yeah.
For a second, I thought the guy was Tom Waits.
That would have been good.
That would have been good cast. That would be Keith Richards level Pirates of the Caribbean casting. They got Tom Waits as the train man. So, but Tom Waits is not as tall as Bruce Spence.
No.
All right, you need a tall, intimidating figure there. So, but speaking of the train station there, we see a Tasty Wheat advertisement, which is, of course, the brand of food that Mouse was talking about in the first film. So it exists in the world of Matrix. That's what world building, again. Look at these guys. So, now, there was only one full-size APU that was ever built for the film. It was completely rendered in AutoCAD, and parts were made detachable so that for scenes involving different pilots, the detail work could be altered. But the full model weighed about 2 tons. 2 tons of that thing.
Is that the Ripley thing?
That is the Ripley machine. From Avatar. That is correct, Brent. So, now, of course, the big centerpiece fight is the fight between Neo and Smith in the rain. And they spent about 2 months designing an apparatus that would make the perfect raindrop for that fight. And many of the raindrops are actually single lines of Matrix code, the ones that are seen in displays in the real world throughout the trilogy. And this effect was designed to imply that the Matrix was beginning to destabilize, like it can keep up with all the corruptions and changes and codes. And for Neo and Smith and they're flying around fighting, a special machine called the Tuning Fork was a rotatable 360-degree machine they constructed specifically for the effect of Neo and Smith fighting in the air and heading upwards in the sky. So I think that's really fantastic. And I've said this before, but like when this movie came out, I'm like, all right, we can finally make modern Superman movies. Like special effects have caught up to us, and it's really exciting to see. And even today, I think like you look at Man of Steel, you look at DCU, like, yeah, it's the same basic special effects, the assets CGI-wise almost, like the blocking here. And the Wachowski's very creative as far as these visuals go, and they've kind of set the standard for how people fight in the air these days.
Yeah, I was watching the behind the scenes making of this, and during pre-production they went into zero gravity on an airplane and they were shooting some stuff for I think some motion capture stuff, and it was only like a 30 seconds of this entire documentary, and I'm like, wow, like they went into, you know, lower orbit just to have like some guy dressed as Neo jump around. And yeah, they're really ahead of the game, the Wachowskis.
The dedication, let me tell you.
Yeah,
the vomit comet.
Yeah,
yeah. They had those vomit bags with them.
That's what they called it on the Apollo 13 footage. They called it the vomit comet, that plane.
So Brandon, I don't know if you can see this detail on your HD DVD, but the bench the Oracle is sitting on in the last scene, there's a small dedication plaque on it, and it says, in memory of Thomas Anderson.
I did not notice that.
Okay. So next time you're watching your HD DVD, just pause it and enhance.
That's interesting. I mean, he's a good director and all, right? But, you know, it's kind of a weird
Paul Thomas Anderson in memoriam. Now, this is a very interesting way to debut the film. This was unprecedented at the time, and I think it might still be, but Matrix Revolutions opened at exactly the same time across the world. Like, not 7 o'clock everywhere, but like 6 a.m. in Los Angeles, 9 a.m. in New York, 2 p.m. in London, 5 p.m. in Moscow, 11 p.m. in Tokyo, and then the next day, November 6th, at 1 a.m. in Sydney, Australia. So that's just mind-blowing, right? I guess, and you'd think they do that today with the age of, like, social media and all these people trying to spoil stuff and all to get the scoop on everybody. Back then, 2003, it was still the infancy of, as far as, like, social media stuff goes, the Facebook.com had not even been invented yet. So I think that's a fantastic idea, and I wish all movies would do that, but I'm sure there's all kinds of contracting rights. I mean, even talking about now, as of this recording, is, you know, big Marvel movies are coming up where they're, like, getting released, and this has been happening, too, before this, but they're getting released in other countries first, and then the U.S., so things are like, oh, God, everybody stay off Twitter. So anyway, I think that's a really cool idea, and I wish all studios would try and work something out along those lines. So that's really cool.
Yeah, especially Star Trek on CBS All Access there.
How topical, Brendan.
I understand that reference. I know what's happening. This is kind of tangentially related. I can't say that word either. This episode is words we can't say. Like, I know for, like, one of the Star Wars movies that came out, they were showing screenings at, like, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. I don't think we'll ever get back to that. I kind of hope we do, because going to a movie at, like, 3 a.m. intrigues me.
There's something about it. You cannot recapture that ambiance, right? I mean, people that go to 7 p.m. the night before, you're weak. All right, you need to stay up till midnight to go to 3 a.m. If you, oh no, they ran out of shows at midnight. Guess we're going at 3 a.m. That is true dedication.
Yeah, you know what they got? They have one at 5 a.m. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. We'll have the rest of the day to ourselves. We'll watch a movie at 5 a.m.
Yes. Come on. So ultimately, box office wise, both Reloaded and Revolutions had a budget of $150 million, which is combined, estimated, $300 million budget for both these films. Reloaded made $741 million worldwide. Revolutions, $427 million worldwide. So just over half of what the second film made is what the third film made, which is, you know, not ideal, not what you want when you're making a trilogy. But if you do the math, right, that's like over $1 billion for these two films, only costing $300 million. So they made 2/3 of it. I mean, that's, you know, if you just look at it that way, the math turned out pretty well. But I guess, I mean, me personally, I only saw Revolutions once because I didn't like it as much, and I still kind of don't as much. But Reloaded, I did see multiple times in the theaters. So I was one of those people that helped push it over to being the highest grossing Matrix movie so far. We'll see when Resurrections comes out, if it can crack the $741 million mark.
Yeah, I guess it was an event, Reloaded, mm-hmm. And I can... I'm not going to forgive people for jumping off the franchise after Reloaded. I can't forgive. Because, I love all these movies. But I can see people just say, you know what? That movie wasn't as great. I'm not going to see the third one. So that's probably that effect, you know, that the negative vibes that that Reloaded gave people. So I can see them not going back.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Right on. Good job on the trivia, Zach. It's, you know, you're just an architect when it comes to, you know, coming all that trivia all together like that. It's just wonderful. I love
it. Of course. What do you think I am? Human?
No, you definitely not, because you just do too good of a job and we're just flawed. So, anyways, let's jump into our discussion on this film. So, Marcelo, I want to start with you, namely because you're our guest, but also because I know that you love this movie, and I do not. And so, I want to hear why you love this so much.
I think this is a perfect end to this trilogy. It brings in all these points that the Wachowskis were making in 1 and 2. And watching it now, I don't know how many times I've seen this movie now. It's a movie I said this for The Matrix. And I if I was here for Reloaded, I would have said the same thing. I said this about Revolutions. It's a movie, every time I watch it, I love it more.
Mm-hmm.
That's the case. It gives me what I want in terms of, like, an action blockbuster, one that's smart, one that's emotional. It What surprised me was the runtime. I forget runtimes. I just watch a movie and
you thought this was gonna be like 2.5 hours, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. I thought this because I'm just so used to, you know, every other franchise movie being 220, 240. I saw Afterlife the other day, and I think that was like 220. And I'm like, why? This one's like, you know, a little over 2 hours. It's like 129 minutes.
Without credits, I think it was bang on 2 hours.
Yes.
You know?
Perfect. Yeah. And it feels like the epic ending that I want. It has like 30 straight minutes of like action, you know, sandwiched like right in the middle of like, you know, emotional moments with Neo and Trinity, and like, I don't know. I can just go on and on, but we are going to go on and on. I'll just say, yeah, it just gives me what I want with these characters in this franchise, and it ended perfectly, and that's why I love it. I mean, it's a movie I can't help but love in a trilogy mm-hmm. I also love. So, yeah, that's my answer.
Mm-hmm. Zach, how about you? Where does this fall for you?
You know, rewatching Reloaded, I was like, you know what, this is really good. Right? Not as great as the first one. But I understand what they're going for here. Had some cool ideas, some consistent action, really delved into the Matrix role and expanded the world inside the Matrix. Because the franchise is like the Matrix, right? And rewatching this one, I was like, nah, the third one still don't work for me. And I think, mainly, I think it becomes more like generic sci-fi. We were joking about like the James Cameron of it all, but I'm like, I'm going to the Matrix to see like, you know, the Matrix. And a lot of this, they don't spin in the Matrix. Mm-hmm. And I don't care much for the Zion people. And I feel like... Yeah. Like, hey, you remember those characters like we mentioned for like 5 minutes in the last film where they were like really important. We're going to spend a lot of time with them and you're going to like really root for them this time. Like, I don't know. Like, the Zion was always my least favorite part of the last movie. And so much of it, this film depends on that. So I didn't really connect with that as well. And I wanted to spend more time in the Matrix. And once we get past like the first, you know, what, 20 minutes or so, we don't go back to the Matrix for the Matrix until the big fight at the end with Smith. So I mm-hmm. As a fan of The Matrix, I wanted to see more of The Matrix and less of Zion. So that's mm-hmm. that's probably a main point of mine, at least for me. Mm-hmm.
I'd agree with some of that here. So I find the ending with Smith in this film to be pretty frustrating because, Marcel, you missed the last conversation, but I said, you know, so in the first Matrix movie, Neo dies fighting Smith. Okay, and he gets brought back to life, and he becomes the one, and he's able to defeat Smith after he's brought back to life. And right. In the second one, I'm like, okay, so now Smith has some of Neo in him, and so he's adapted, he's able to make more of him. And while Neo is the one, he's still able to basically easily take on hundreds of Smiths with virtually no problem. So to me, that defangs him. In that film, he feels defanged to me. And so here we are with the climax at the end of this, where there's like literally billions of Smiths now, and he ends up just fighting one of them. The rest of them are just standing around there watching him.
But they literally explain that, Brandon. He's like, I'm the one that beat you. Like, I understand what you're saying, but like the movie addresses it, so I'm like, okay, you guys acknowledge that, and you addressed it.
Yes.
Did you also mention that in the second one, wait, who did you say is defanged in the second one?
Smith.
No, see, but at the end of that fight, at the end of the Burly Brawl, as you know, as they call it, Neo had to get the hell out of there, and he said after the fight, like, I felt like dying. Like, he was close to losing, but he just got the hell out of there. So I don't think Smith was defanged. Or I don't think Neo. I think both of them were like equals. Mm-hmm. I think. If the fight continued on, you'd see maybe Neo being knocked out and Reloaded.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not selling you.
No, yeah, that's fine, though. Like I trust you because you've seen this a lot more than me, okay? And so, like, things that I'm like, this doesn't quite work for me, you will have thought about these things, I'm sure, right? So, like, just as a person who's seen this 3 or 4 times now, it's like, I don't know, like, these movies are just not connecting with me for some reason. Like, they just really don't connect with me, and that's one of the big things for me. And it just feels weird. And I know that they say that I'm the one that beat you, but it just, I don't know, the ending is just weird to me, and it just it's kind of a letdown to me when watching it. It's for me, I don't know how to say it other than that. It's a letdown ending for me. So
I understand. I get it. And I think And I guess we'll just jump to this end, because I wrote this down. This is like the one line I'll probably take with me to the grave. I think of this line so much that I do think that final fight is like, it's like, I was thinking about it earlier, it's the only anime I'll ever watch over and over again. Okay? I don't like anime, get out of my face, but this is definitely influenced by every anime ever made. Uh-huh. You can tell, because that's the Wachowskis like to recycle, like to reuse art and make it their own, and that's a clear example of it. The final fight. With like, okay, the emotional tie for me at the end is Neo's sacrifice, and I think for me, Smith is just a means to an end. Smith is death. That's like one thing that really popped out of me this time watching it. I think it's very obvious, like, because like,
he's inevitable.
Yeah, it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. Like, and that nihilism that Smith has at the end, like, why do you persist? Like, why do you do this? Like, nothing matters. Like, it nothing matters. And then Neo says the line, I get chills thinking about it now. He says, because I choose to. It's like, that's why I do things. And I think it's, for me, it's simple as that. It's like, why do anything? Why fight this cause that, you know, in the end, for everybody, we're all going to die. But why does Neo do it now? Because he chooses to. Mm-hmm. And to me, that emotion, it may not answer your questions, Brandon, but to me, like, that emotional tie really brings me into this movie, especially at the end. So I can forgive some things not making sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm okay, here's one thing. I'm going to talk negatively about this movie now. I still don't really get why, like, Smith says something that the Oracle was saying. Because I know the Oracle is in Smith's body at some point.
Yeah, but the Smith who was fighting Neo was actually the Oracle who got turned into Smith, as we see, because she's the one laying in the crater there
right,
at the end.
Right.
Which, Brandon, see, to your point, there is no Smith Prime. They're all equally Smith. I know you were confused about that last time, but they're all just equally him. So, yeah, why does he say that everything that has a beginning has an end, Neo? Oh, wait, why did I say that? Get away from me! Ah! That was a very odd moment.
So, and to me, I think it kind of pulls away from Neo's main journey. Like, to me, like, I read that as like, what, did the Oracle have this planned all along? Because it kind of seems that way. But I think that takes away from Neo's journey in that, like, he does something I don't think was brought up by anybody else. He just goes to that, to the source and says, all right, I'm going to give you the option, you know, big baby face robot thing. I'm going to give you the option. Either you let me in there and let me kill Smith or we all die. And I love that choice that he makes. And like, that's his own choice. That's a choice he gives to somebody else. But I think the Oracle being involved at the end kind of takes it away. Again, maybe it's something I don't understand. Maybe it's something the Wachowskis need to explain to me. But having seen this movie so many times, like, I'll take issue with that. And like, it's not very clear to me, or it kind of conflicts with like some of my the things I love about this movie. So I'll say that.
For me, then, so then continuing on with the end of the film here, because, like, I mean, it's, I don't know, as far as I'm concerned, like, with all the battles and the war and whatnot, I don't think there's much to talk about there. Maybe I'm wrong, but, like, with all the Zion attacking and whatnot, but we can come back to that.
I have things to say, but we can come back
to that. Sure, yeah, we'll come back. So, at the end of this, they're like, okay, so the war is over. They're all happy. The war is done. The war is over. The machines go away at the end and whatnot. Neo dies, and yet the Matrix lives on. So I guess my satisfactory ending to this trilogy would have been that the Matrix gets shut down completely and everybody gets out and becomes real people and real society gets
rebuilt. And the machines and humans work together to rebuild the Earth.
Not necessarily built together. I don't know where I would want that to go. I'm not a writer, but I'm just saying that, like, it feels weird that the Matrix is still running, because that doesn't feel like a victory to me. Because what they're fighting for is to awaken everybody. That's the impression that I get, is that Morpheus is fighting to put an end to the Matrix, to get everybody out of it, because they're enslaved within the Matrix. Yet the Matrix is still around at the end.
But they gave him the choice at the end, right? Because the Oracle's like, what about the ones who want to be free? And Architect's like, well, obviously they'll be freed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It plays into the whole, like, the opening of this movie, gives life to these like programs, these like machines, and gives them a face, and sort of like tries to already level the playing field of like who's worthy of living, and is this war it, like both sides of the war, are they justified in their wanting to destroy the other side? And this end of the movie may not be what either side wants, but it's the ceasefire. It's the okay, we'll stop. Like this is like, and to me, I would have never expected. Oh, I'm lying. You know, I kind of would have. You know, back when this movie came out, I'm like, oh, are they going to make another one? Because it kind of seems like there's like still stuff that's unanswered.
Are we going to see Neo again? Oh, I think we will one day in the Matrix Resurrections coming 2021.
I said earlier I thought this was a perfect ending, but even in my head I'm like, oh, like maybe there's room for more. Maybe like, because I do want to see what happens after this. Like, is this, you know, peacetime going to last? Because like, hey, you know, living in the world today, you know, peacetime may go on for decades and then all of a sudden things erupt. So yeah, I kind of took it as that. It's like both sides aren't getting what they want, really. But they're living in like this very shaky peacetime that I'm okay with, because as of right now, it's all copacetic. It's all good, man. Just look at the sunset. It's fine for now, but we'll see. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So then.
Well, and then, but also I think it is. It would be so two dimensional to be like, we defeated the machines and now we are free. Like, I like the fact there was at least some sort of like a non-conventional resolution to, yeah, like, we've exactly defeated the mainframe and we're free now. It's like, no, we had to come to some compromise and we have some understanding. Well, that's a lot more realistic and less clean, all right, than tying it up in an ice bow, like, we shut down the Matrix and now we're all free and machines are destroyed and humans victory and blah, blah, blah. It's more nuanced, which is the whole point of the whole trilogy, really.
Okay. Okay, so talking to my wife, because I didn't catch this, but she brought this up to me, so then this got me thinking. So she says that the little girl is the next one. That's her impression. So is that like...
Oh, is... I never thought about it that way. I mean...
But she's a program, though, right? So that...
She is a program. To me, you know, I'm not going to toss in what I think, like, what's going to happen next in Resurrections, but, like, at the end of this third one, I guess my initial response to her character in the end was like, she might be sort of like, I don't know, Bible stuff, like an apostle, like telling the good word of Neo, you know, from hence thereforth.
She made the sunset, so she has some power. Yeah.
Oh, she has power, yeah. Like, but I never thought of her as like the next one, just maybe a program that's kind of on the side of like, on both sides. It's like speaking, you know, how great Neo was, and also being, you know, programmer herself. So that's how I understood the character. And yeah.
Okay. Cause I didn't get that, but my wife was like adamant that she's like, this is the next one. And I'm like, okay, you like these movies better than I do, so I'll go with that. Okay. So she loves these movies too. Right. Like, so I'm like, well, I had a problem with that because I'm like, okay, so they're already prepping the next one before the other one is Neo one is gone, or like what? So like, I kind of had a problem with that when I was thinking about it. But anyway, so if that's not the case, then that's also fine. That's just.
But then again, who knows? Because one thing that wasn't, oh, I don't know, like, was it made? Again, like, I'm kind of also again speaking negatively about this. The whole in Reloaded, when they said, by the way, Neo, you're not the one, you're just a program, kind of like we put this programming in you and it's happened, you know, so many times before, like this is just another cycle of the same thing where, you know, we you guys have seen the movie, you know.
Yeah.
But like, I think when that chain breaks, and my whole theory is the chain breaks because Neo is in love, because the one is in love.
The Arctic he says like, interesting. Your predecessors had a more universal love, and yours is very specific, and that's what breaks the cycle. Yeah,
and that's what breaks the cycle, right? So who's to say, like, if I don't know, like if in the programming there's already like another one coming or something. So I don't know. Again, it's not very clear what happens when one breaks. Mm-hmm. Like when the one breaks from the program, what happens after that? So
you
knows?
Can't see past the choices you don't understand, Marcelo. That's what's important. Yeah,
exactly.
Here, so. Well, speaking of that, though, like, okay, speaking of the one being in love, let's talk about Trinity for a second, right? So it was a big deal that Neo saved Trinity's life in the last film, right? Mm-hmm. And then this is like hours later. Like, this is not like a year later or 6 hours later, she dies anyway. So I feel like they could have leaned into more like the whole fate thing more than they did. The fact that, like, even though he saved her, she's going to die anyway, because it just seems like, I don't know, like, that was such a big crux of the second film, and she ends up dead anyway. So that's something that fell flat for me, the ending of her character.
Yeah. let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Something else I don't care for is the death of Trinity and how they handled it. The actual death, like, the way she dies, it's overkill. The amount of, like,
how many pipes needed
spikes
to insert into her, yeah.
Well, I just don't know why he didn't just kiss her and bring her back to life.
Right? That's what they do. Like, it's the
apparently, he doesn't have that power in the real world, although he has
some powers, which is awesome, yeah. Yes. But yes.
But in my head, I'm like, well, I guess he needed somebody to drive the ship, and
you should probably drive. That's a good line. That's a good line.
Yeah. Yeah, I do agree. She should have gone out in a better way. They could have worked it better. Her end.
She didn't have a good goodbye with Morpheus. Like, Neo's like, it's been an honor, sir. The honor was mine. That's great. But she knew Morpheus for years, presumably before Neo. Like she's just in the elevator there waiting. So I think she was underserved. In this movie,
that I can say it's, in the end she is underserved. Mm-hmm. I'll say that. And I hope in Resurrections. I mean, she's there, so we'll see how big of a role she plays. I hope really big, and I hope if we see her die again, it's a better
you can't
death.
Stop killing them off in every movie. You can't kill this. Have these main characters dying, trading off dying in every movie,
This will kind of go into the Zion thing, but the thing I love about Revolutions is how each character plays their role. And I think if they didn't play the role, and if there wasn't like some sort of payoff with each character, like the kid, or I love this movie, but I'm not good with character names. You know, the woman with like the rocket launcher.
She wasn't in the second one, was she? Rocket launcher woman?
She was. Not the one who gets killed. I don't think she was.
Right. Z but the is one... Link's wife.
Yes.
And
so
her
Z,
friend is the one with the rocket launcher. She's like, "Oh, you scared? Oh, me too." I'm like, "Who are you?"
Exactly. She's new. You know, they all do their part in sort of like helping each other out. If there wasn't that connective tissue, if there wasn't those like payoffs with each of these characters, I would not have liked, you know, all the Zion stuff as much. And that leads me to like talking about Trinity, because I think her ultimate goal was to get Neo to the source. And again, going to my point, like, she could have had something better to do, like, because like to be the driver to take Neo there, you know, she's like the second most important character in this franchise, and to have her relegated to chauffeur, kind of frustrating.
And plays no role in the climax at all, yeah. So I did like that they had just a moment, but like a vulnerability with Neo after she dies. He's like generally just crying, because you still, you know, it's like that was a nice vulnerable moment for him.
And I will say, like, I'll say she takes part in one of the most beautiful moments in the movie, like when she lifts the ship up through the clouds and sees the sun.
Yes, yes.
That's beautiful. She has a great moment there, but then, you know, 5 minutes later she died.
Five seconds later they crash into it. But no, that is a beautiful moment, seeing like they were the only humans who have seen, well, I guess her, not him, but who've seen the
just
sun
her.
And who knows how long, right? So
because
Neo can only see machine things, right?
Yeah.
Very undefined. Yeah. That's another huge problem I have with this movie. Very undefined real world powers. Like, oh, the powers
don't ask
of the
me to explain it.
The powers of the One extend far beyond the Matrix. Like, why? How? Like, this is like, I know everybody's theory was like, it's another level of the Matrix, and that's fine. They didn't do that, but
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was like one of the theories going around. So, there's another level.
Right.
Like, just you wait. No.
That also would have been as full of plot holes. Like, that's not the answer here. But I also think him just having powers is full of plot holes as well.
I really had to think about it today, because I really wanted an answer. And again, this may be a criticism, but I'm going to take it as like, oh, it's just very, you know, it's one of those things you don't need to explain. Just go with the flow. But I was also trying to explain it. I thought, well, because of the program that the Matrix gave Neo, like maybe now that he's gone past that mark of like no return, that now he's in, now he's like, it's like now in his DNA, like now he has these powers outside the Matrix. I don't know. That's kind of how I explained it away. But again, not clear.
Well, the movie does not explain it. Like, okay, so they go to see the Merovingian, and he's like, hey, so how did this happen? They're like, well, we don't know. He's like, okay, well, I thought I'd ask. Like, they're like, we have no idea how this occurred. So, oh, man. And that's another, and then, Brandon, I know we're kind of, Marcel and I are going back and forth here, but.
No, not at all, man. I'm loving it.
So, yeah. So Merovingian, right? Good character in Reloaded. Oh, cool, they brought back him and Persephone. Can't wait to see what happens with him. They're in this one scene. Big deal. They put a gun against his head. Oh, it's over. Excellent movie. You like that?
I like that scene.
Okay. No, because I like the scene, but then it's like, oh, he's gone now. They're done. Like, oh, I don't know.
It's fine. This, I mean, they, there was no real reason to bring them back. You know, Monica Bellucci and the Merovingian. But I'm glad they were there. And I love the scene more than them in it, if that makes sense, because it's again another point where character Trinity, one of the best characters in this franchise, she goes, you know what, I'm not gonna do this anymore, I'm not gonna, you know, listen to somebody and make a choice, I'm gonna make my own decision here, and like blow your head off,
pulls the old dodge this on him, and
yeah exactly. So
yeah, they felt like that. They felt like themselves, like those characters, Persephone and Merovingian coming back, like those felt like the same characters. She's you can tell she's kind of getting off on the emotion that's going on, you know, the shots of her, she's like, oh, she'll kill every last one of us because she's in love. And it's like, okay, so I liked them, but I guess to have them so early and then not at all on the rest, I was like, oh man, I want to see more. But then the Matrix just kind of, I guess they all got turned to Agent Smith at some point, right? So the Matrix just becomes, this is my world, right? And there you go.
Again, I mean, you mentioned, I think it was Brandon, you mentioned like they're not in the Matrix, or maybe Zach mentioned it too. Like, they're not in the Matrix that often in this movie, which is a realization I just had just now. And you guys are right. But I don't mind it. Mm-hmm. Although maybe more scenes of Smith taking over bodies would have been good to see.
Some kind of progression.
Yeah, because the only scene like that we get is Smith taking over the Oracle and the kid, right? And that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I would have liked, you know.
You would know, Mom. What does that mean? But they just said they never met before. What are you saying? I don't know. I'm confused. So, hey, think about this. That would have been a cool cliffhanger. Like, I know they had to set up the kid and all this and the actress, Oracle stuff. But, like, if you're thinking of an alternative cliffhanger to the second one, him taking over the Oracle and maniacally laughing and then have to be continued, that would have been a cool cliffhanger.
That would have been good.
Now, lots of other story threads have to move around for that. I'm just watching it now, thinking about a nice breaking point for that. And then you come back and the third movie is like The Matrix, it's all Smith. I'm just thinking of that. You don't have to like have a progression because it's a new movie, and you can infer those things happening in between. That's when my mind went there. We're talking about the progression, but thoughts, Brandon.
Yeah.
So
we're talking about a lot here.
We're talking about a lot here. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to jump into here is the Bane plot. So,
oh yes,
this wraps up a little bit too quickly and is very. For that being the cliffhanger from the previous film, this was very underwhelming in this movie for me.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on human Agent Smith, Marcelo?
I like it well enough. I think the confrontation is a good payoff to Bane, and the way he gets killed is great visually. And I guess it gets the job done in terms of upping the stakes. In terms of, like, blinding Neo, I like that visual of, like, now a blindfolded Neo going about things. I liked it well enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see your point. Like,
teases, like, the ultimate, like, oh, my God, Agent Smith is out of the Matrix now. It's this cliffhanger. He's going to be the, like, to me, structurally, it's like that should be the final boss for Neo almost, like, when he destroys the Matrix things. Because that's the, oh, no, we thought we destroyed the one we knew, but here's the one we don't know, and it's one last obstacle. Like, structurally, I feel like they could have shifted things around, but.
I get that. But that scene on the ship with that confrontation, I enjoy that scene a lot. So that gave me enough payoff for that. But I see your point that, like, the cliffhanger, you know, Bane should have been maybe the main bad guy or something. But yeah, I get it. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, this is...
you're not convinced at all.
I'm not. I don't know. Zach, is there anything else you want to talk about in this film? Because, like, I don't know. Like, it's just... this happened to me when we covered the Blade movies, you know? Like, I'm just like...
Well, my God.
I didn't like these movies, and I'm like, I don't know what to say on these movies.
Children of the Corn, I understand, Brandon, but come on, these are...
I want to like... Like, these movies are cultural tentpoles for our society, right?
The first one, for sure, two and three... not yet anyway. It's a shame. Yeah. But, the first one for sure. But after seeing the second one, Brandon, I mean, I left that Matrix episode and you were just very like, nah. So, these three now, you're not a fan of at all,
no,
right?
No, I'm not. Like, it's like, we'll get to it shortly here when we cover them, but like, I'm just... Well, I don't know. I just don't. It's just it doesn't work for me, and that's all that I can say.
You like the philosophical stuff, right? Of these.
Well, see, that's just it too.
Did you find any of that in this one? Or yeah,
I felt the philosophical stuff wasn't here, but I also didn't really care for it in the other movies. Like I was talking with my wife, and she's like, "I love these deep philosophical questions, and it's like these questions of choice and
karma is,
you know,
just
like,
a word, Brandon. Is the connection to the word?" And she responded, "You're like I the whole program parents kids thing. I could leave, but like I liked how they were just exploring that because that's what sticks out most about these films to me,
right? But
it elevates them."
I don't know. Like, to me, it's just by the end of the whole trilogy, I'm like, this doesn't speak to me because it's like, it starts off where society's a lie and we're just all slaves for this machine race. And it's like, well, but at the end of it, that doesn't really say anything to me about what society is, you know? And I don't know, like, I almost want by the end of the trilogy to have like a reconstruction understanding of what our society is in general. And re-looking at our lives as like, am I a slave in my life right now? Because I don't feel that type of reflection upon where my life is. Because that's where it started. That's where this whole franchise started. Is the reality that you know is not what you think it is, and you're just a slave living in it. Okay, so I think by the end of it, I should be reflecting on my role within my society, and I just don't at the end of the three movies.
I said it before, that final line. One of the final lines Neo says to Smith, like, that to me,
I choose.
Because I choose to, like to your point about kind of recontextualizing your life, you know, I kind of see that in this where I take that and pretty much everything I've said about the Matrix movies is about like choice. Like that's the theme, choice,
yes,
choice.
Yes.
And I take those themes with me in this movie, and I think about them almost constantly when I think about these movies and when I think about the Wachowskis, and that's what I take away is, you know, we don't have to follow the rules because they're there, right? Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to break the law, but I'm just saying, like, how we choose to live our lives, like who we're with, who we choose to spend time with, what we do in our lives, what we do in our careers, who we love, all this stuff, like we can choose, you know, to do something different. And to me, that's what I get out of the Matrix trilogy is like just to live, you know, because I choose to, mm-hmm. you know, that's maybe corny on the face of it, but I take that too. It's a very beautiful thing for me, like these movies and that theme at the end that I grasp onto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it, man. Like if you connect to certain things movies are saying, like that they can hook you and keep it that way. I totally agree. Like Star Trek V, right? Captain Kirk, he's like, I need my pain, right? I'm like, okay, I connect with that. I love this movie. Unironically, I know people don't like Star Trek V, but it's not as good as 2, 3, and 4 or 6.
Is that the one where they fight God?
Okay, that was an alien pretending to be God. Yes, Captain Kirk fights God, if you want to put it that way. Speaking of God, I'll say this. Bible stuff, as you said, Marcel, right? Neo dying at the end. Very Christian imagery with like the cross, yes, and the
100%.
You could say, I mean, you could, like, Jesus' crucifixion, becoming sin, saving the world. Like, there's a lot of that in there. If Smith is indeed death, the 21st century cyber Jesus becoming death to win, like, that's all right there for you. But again, as we've been talking about through all three of these, like, it is what you bring to it, right? Mm-hmm. So this everything is like, there's some symbolism, but it's vague enough, and you can read into it what you want. So that's what they're going for with that. That's what I connected to. I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of see what they did there. And again, he can't, like, it's an unconventional way to win, right? So it's like he's giving up, sacrificing himself. And he won that way, as opposed to, I'm more powerful than you, Agent Smith. I beat you, right? So that's cool. Is like, what could you do? Like, do some really cool move to feel like, I don't, what would be satisfying there? I really don't know with how they've built up these two characters over the three movies. And that, again, that was an unconventional way to win. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And back when I first saw this movie, I think I mentioned this on the Matrix episode, like, I was very much into philosophy, and they have these bonus features on the trilogy box set, mm-hmm. About philosophy, and, like, one thing, maybe you guys talked about this in Reloaded, but, like, the fact that mind, body, and soul play roles in these movies, where I forget what's what. Mind could... body is Zion, mind is the Matrix, and soul... wait. Soul is the programs. Whatever.
You guys have seen the movies. You get it.
Yeah, you get it. Yeah. Mind, body, soul. Like, those three factions of things come together in the end, and that and Nirvana is achieved. You know, that's a very, I think, in-your-face sort of, like, philosophical point that the Wachowskis make. That those three things can't survive on their own, and you need to bring them together to kind of, you know, fulfill some sort of peace within yourself. So, mm-hmm. There you go.
Good. Okay.
How about that? Nothing, Brandon? No? Okay.
Yeah, man.
Brandon is definitely taking the blue pill as far as these movies go. So, yeah.
Final thoughts? Any final thoughts? Anything we missed that you haven't talked about yet here?
Ultimately, for me, the third is the letdown. The second one expanded the world, and I'm interested to see where it went. But then I'm like, oh, okay, it's. And I said this before too in the Reloaded conversation. I feel like, because I'll be on record here. I like Reloaded. I don't like Revolution still. But had there been time between them, as cool as it was to be 6 months, like, Reloaded could have had its own identity, and then Revolutions would have had its own, and you could have been like, yeah, those first two were great, but that third one kind of pulled it down. Perhaps everyone still would have said the two and three wasn't the same. I don't know, but I think for me anyway, if there was more space between these coming out, you wouldn't just combine your thoughts into one opinion of both movies, and that might help Reloaded. But this is where it goes off the rails for me as far as the resolution in Revolutions.
Ooh, I like that. Marcel, anything else you want to add here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else I could say. I love this movie.
I'm glad that you do.
We're going to get
like
the hell until we do, Marcelo.
I want to like these movies more than I do. I really do want to like them more than I do. I really do.
I feel like I failed as a guest because your opinion has not changed.
I like the second one now.
Okay, good. Zach, you're on board. I got that. But I'll just say this, that, like, It's a shame. This happens with movies. You know, not everybody loves, you know, one movie equally. Like, it's fine. I get it. But I wanted to, you know, I've always wanted the sequels, the Matrix sequels, to get their due, to get their recognition. And it's probably not going to happen by the time Resurrections comes out. I don't see that wave turning. Sort of like how Speed Racer was, like, kind of like a cult hit, not many people were on board, and then I see more and more people throughout the years love that movie. It's not going to happen with Revolutions for sure. Reloaded, maybe, but Revolutions to me is always like the black sheep, but I love it. It has its faults, like I said, the Trinity stuff, some of the stuff doesn't make sense. It does kind of go way out there in terms of, like, the Wachowskis really giving it their all with, like, anime and mysticism, religion, they're putting it all in. But I like that because it's something different in a blockbuster franchise. And mm-hmm. I'd rather have more of this than what we usually get. So this weird mysticism with like sci-fi. It's basically they're just witches putting all this thing in a pot, and I like it at the end. I like whatever they cook up here. So that's my take on Revolutions. It's probably never going to get that recognition, which is fine. I accept it, but I got its back.
Well, that's how Zach and I feel about Halloween Resurrection, right?
Like I said in previous episodes, I'm right there with you. I like that movie.
Yeah, I know. I love what you say there. Like this is not like the Transformers movies or something like that, right? There was much more to them, right? So they're bringing something to the conversation beyond just like spectacle. So nothing else. And hey, it has some great Agent Smith lines like, "I'm not so bad once you get to know me." It's some iconic Agent Smith stuff. In three.
Hugo Weaving, I don't want to go long, but I'll just say like he is like one of the best villains
he's great.
Ever on
he
screen really for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's so absolutely. He is consistently so awesome good. Across this trilogy. Yeah. So
yeah. So I'm very happy at least that, you know, that's some good stuff I think we can all agree.
You like what I've done with the place?
Well, Marcelo, I just want to say that my final thoughts are, after hearing all of your positivity for these, I wish I would have taken the time to rewatch these movies for this discussion.
Wait, what?
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Brandon, you're not supposed to tell them you don't rewatch these movies when we talk about them. So.
No, I definitely did. I promise that I did. So.
Okay, good.
Zach, you got some questions for us?
I do have some questions.
Oh.
For you. How many bullet time counts are in this movie?
Okay, I didn't count any.
Yeah, I am. What do you think, Mistrello?
I should have remembered this from the first episode I was on, because I don't think there are any either. In the club scene, they do kind of slow motion jumping on the ceiling stuff, but there's no
like, true 360 no true, bullet time stuff. Yeah. I had two maybes.
Trinity jumping up. Trinity
yeah,
jumping
so Trinity
up.
Jumping up is one of them, but they don't pan around or anything. So that doesn't. I mean, that was a maybe, but we're not going to count that. I guess.
Can you remind me if there were any in Reloaded?
We came up with six in Reloaded.
There were six. Yeah. Interesting.
A lot of the Trinity out the window.
Oh, that's right.
See, the Neo versus Smith didn't count because the Trinity one, she was falling and the camera was panning with her.
There was a slight
going
when,
around.
Not right? all so the shots, but we so, came up with six.
Yeah.
Okay, so we
I'm sorry I missed that discussion there. I should have been there.
We were at 10 so far of the franchise, and now with this one, so no Trinity kick in the club. That was one option. The other option is the Agent Smith punch to the face.
Oh, that one's
but
tough.
But that one, it wasn't moving either. It was just there.
Well, it was. If you follow Neo's fist, it does pan around and hit his face.
Kind of move.
However, it is a meld between. It is. Okay. It does what we want it to. But my problem with it is, it's pretty much all CG. It's not live action. So it's like they did some kind of meld at some point with Keanu Reeves turning into a CGI guy and then punching Agent Smith. So that's why it's a maybe too. So
well, we did count some of the CGI ones from the second one.
All right. So then let's count.
Do it.
I don't think we should count it, but we'll
thought
count
this
it.
Was going to be such a slam dunk tally board. I'm like, well, it's the Matrix. They're going to bold time everywhere. I'm like, no, it's like grand total 11 over three movies. Are you kidding me? Like it broke me when we decided that stopping bullets with time didn't count in our first conversation. I'm like, well, what are we even doing this for now? Bullet time count can't count
is,
bullets.
I like that they subvert expectations. That's what you want to see in Matrix movies, right? After the first one, just nothing, nonstop bullet time. And now we're at the third one where we're just like, is that one? No, maybe.
Prediction, Marcelo. There's going to be tons of bullet time in Matrix Resurrections. It's going to be all over the place.
I don't think
there'll be
any.
I'm going to say no. I will say another shout out to Hugo Weaving. That documentary, again, watch it, The Burly Man Chronicles. Almost every other scene is him doing another like practical effect test or like being like scanned. Like he's the most digitally scanned man, I think, in history, Hugo Weaving. Poor guy.
All that being said, our bullet time count, three movies in, stands at 11.
11, yeah. So, okay.
11. With only one from this film.
I think it's going to stay at 11. I don't think we're going to see it at all in the next one myself. So,
I'll predict one. It'll happen one time.
That's one, okay. Excellent. Okay, so Marcelo, Zach, what's our rating on this one? What do we call it again? I can't remember. How many
red pills?
How many red pills would you take?
Would you take for this film?
Out of five.
Out of five. If it's okay, I'll also get my reloaded.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
For sure.
And also to remind myself, I think I gave Matrix 1 5 out of 5.
Yep.
Reloaded 4.5 out of 5. Mm-hmm. Take half a pill. And then Revolutions 4.5 out of 5. Same rating. Okay. So there you go.
All right.
Zach, how many red pills?
Well, as for me, for some context, I gave the Matrix 5 out of 5 red pills. I gave the Matrix Reloaded 4 out of 5 red pills. And then finally, I'm going to give the Matrix Revolutions 2 out of 5 red pills.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. It just... There's so much nonsensical stuff here, man. Like, Neo having powers in the real world, a Deus Ex Machina literally coming out, oh, we'll plug you in, Neo, and save the day. Like, I was like, no.
It's great.
Trinity, wasted. Morpheus didn't have much to do in this movie either, honestly, in my opinion. We didn't even talk about, like, any of, like, the Niobe stuff. Oh, I'm flying the ship to the thing. I was fine. But, like, that stuff in an action movie, like, that could be happening off screen and you never need to see it. Like, I think Brandon and I mentioned this a little bit. Like, if they just would have made Reloaded a little longer, kept the Matrix stuff from this film in it, wrapped it all up, you didn't need a lot of this stuff. Because neither of us connected with the Zion stuff the way you did. So, when you don't connect with it, you're like, man, can we cut back to the Matrix, please? Like, what is Neo doing? Yeah, so that's a big thing.
I want to see
him
flying again. I want to see him do the Superman thing.
I'm here for bullet time, Marcelo. Where is it? That's all I need.
I get it. I think that's the big difference. I'm totally okay with the Zion stuff. Yeah. I like all those Zion characters, and yeah, so it worked for me. It's a tapestry. It's an ensemble.
Yeah. Zach, I'm surprised you gave it a 2. I thought you were going to give it a 3 because all the complaints that I had, you're like, you're wrong, Brandon, because of this. So I thought you were defending this thing and maybe
a
rating.
I'm a mediator here, Brandon. I am the train man.
And and also, it was 2.5, right? Not a 2, right?
No, I give it a 2.
Oh, you give it a 2? Oh, it's even worse than I thought.
So I gave the first one a 4, and I actually rewatched it after our conversation. I watched it with my kids. And that's why I didn't tell you, because I hadn't watched it with Annika yet. That's right. That's why I didn't tell you then. And my rating did go up to a 4. On the first one.
Okay.
And, I said 3.5, but I give solids. So I gave it a 4, but it was a 3.5. So I made it a solid 4. Reloaded, I gave 3. And this one, I'm also giving 2. I'm giving Revolutions a 2 out of 5 red pills. So
2 twos.
So, Marcelo, at this point, not knowing what's coming, is this franchise fatigued?
No, I don't think so. I even mentioned earlier that after seeing this for the first time, or one of those first time watches in the beginning in 2003, I thought, what could happen after this? Like, are they going to do a sequel? I think that's one of the things I Googled. It's like, are they going to do another one? There are always rumors, and I'm here for it. I was here for those rumors 2003, and I'm excited to see it come back. So I don't think it's fatigued at all. Not at all.
Zach, how about you?
I'm going to say no. Even though I give this a low score, like, the Matrix, like, the concept of it, and even the mythology they set up in these movies, like, it lends itself to more. More takes, more versions of the one, right? I mean, you can go a lot of places, but you can explore the Matrix more, because we talked about they became the Agent Smith's world in this film. So there's a lot of possibilities with this concept. That's why the Matrix is still such a powerful pop culture thing, because it's a very unique, very specific concept. And I would love to see more of it. And I'm excited that we are getting more. And we'll take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a definite hard yes for me that this is fatigued on this one here. So I'm...
It's Brandon talking to the Wachowskis. Why do you persist?
Yes. And they'll tell me because it's inevitable.
Because they choose to, Brandon.
There you go.
That's why. I did like a lot of stuff in here, but there's just a lot of stuff that cancels it out. So I liked Reloaded more than I thought, and this was still on par. Like, the needle did not move for me on this one, but Reloaded did. So for whatever that's worth.
I will say, Zach, I've watched the trailer for Resurrections a few times more, and I'm getting pretty excited for it.
It's the most fantastic trailer of all time, I think, at this point. I mean, like, I usually say that stuff in hyperbole, but I really do think it's one of the best trailers ever put together. I'm so hyped for it. I went from, like, being done with The Matrix to, like, I cannot wait for this movie and rewatch these, so I can't wait. So
yeah, I mentioned it before. That's one of those movies where movie trailers where I put the phone down and focus. That has not changed. I've been to the theater a few more times since I was last here. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Like, every time it comes up, I focus because it looks amazing. I saw it on an IMAX screen the other day. Mm. And oh boy, I'm excited.
I hope they don't release any more trailers. I think we know all we need to know, and I think the song and the editing, everything was perfect. And let's not dilute the market with more. As we saw with the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer, just don't release any more trailers.
At this point, if I were to guess, I mean, they're releasing more posters as of this recording, and I wouldn't be surprised if they release one more trailer. But I'm with you. Like, I've seen enough. Just play that trailer over and over. I'm good. And judging by people I was watching it with, I mean, they were there to see Ghostbusters, so, you know, I guess they're nostalgia freaks. But people react to the Matrix Resurrections trailer with, like, joy. It's like, oh, it's coming back. So, it's exciting.
Excellent. Right on. Marcelo, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you on to discuss Resurrections.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, which, honestly, I still think should be called Rebooted. Based on what I'm seeing in the trailer, it should be Matrix Rebooted.
But they were resurrected, Brandon.
Yeah, sure, they were resurrected. But they could also be rebooted. So, you know, when they reboot something, and, you know, it gets an upgrade, right?
That'll be the next sequel, maybe.
Maybe, so.
You can't reboot Jesus.
Well, I mean, hey, God went to see The Matrix and Family Guy, right? So, you know.
Just got back from seeing The Matrix.
Anyways, Marcelo, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you online?
They can find me over at talkfilmsociety.com. Check us out. Check out all the podcasts. I got my Talk Film Society podcast, The Mothership, going strong. Possibly at this point, I would have released the 100th episode. That's exciting. And just patreon.com/talkfilmsociety to support us, to support the shows, to keep us going. Mm-hmm. That's it. Please check that out. Bye.
Excellent. Zach, where can people find you when you're not baking cookies?
Well, I'm always baking cookies, Brandon, but you can find me on Twitter at moronzach. That's MOREONZACH. Also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville. We talk about each and every episode of That Young Superman Show. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysSmallville with one S. And I do another show here at UFP Sasquatch, a Bigfoot multimedia podcast where me and Ken Tripp talk about the multimedia books, movies, TV shows, iterations of Bigfoot. So you can find us on Twitter at SasquatchPod.
Excellent. And as for me, you can find me here on the network with a show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek, and we are just diving into Season 4 of Star Trek Discovery right now. And you can find me as well on Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where my friends Chris and Tom and I cover all of Hitch's films in chronological order. And I'm looking forward. Our January episode is going to be Psycho, so I'm going to show Aubrey Psycho. She's 11.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to show her Psycho, so I think she'll be down with that. So, yeah. Thank you so much to Ken Tripp and Tony Robinson for being our executive producers of the network. Thank you so much to Zach Tripp for creating our wonderful theme music. Thank you so much to our executive producers, David Willett and Casey Pettit. Thank you so much.
Our associate producers.
What did I say?
As executive producers.
Well, we just gave them a reboot. They've been rebooted and upgraded.
That's right.
Just like The Matrix.
They've been resurrected.
Resurrected to the next level for now. Anyways, thank you so much to all of our fans. If you could please give us a rating and review, we definitely appreciate that. We haven't had one in a while. Go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever they call it now, whatever they've rebooted it into. Just go and give us a review. And that's all we got for you this time. Until next time, when we cover the fourth movie in the Matrix franchise, Resurrections, go bake some cookies.
Because I choose to.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.